Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of DashPass by DoorDash.
Mm-mm-mm. Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now, or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile, and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier and timely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks. No cash access and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
I'm Susie Welch, the host of Becoming You, a podcast where I help you stop living by default and start living by design. Listen to Becoming You wherever you get your podcasts.
Now it's time for Inside the Clubhouse, a show dedicated to the Chicago baseball fan, featuring the best Chicago baseball conversation, as well as the big MLB topics, along with the biggest names, greatest guests, and listener interaction, starring Score baseball insider Bruce Levine and half of Chicago's number one sports morning show, David Haw, on Sports Radio 670 The Score and 670thescore.com, a radio.com sports station presented by Bet Rivers Sportsbook.
Good Saturday morning, Chicago. We are broadcasting live from the Hyundai Score Studios, and welcome to a Thanksgiving weekend edition of Inside the Clubhouse, where we are very grateful to be talking baseball 52 weeks a year every Saturday morning here, 9 to 11 with Bruce Levine, David Haw. And if you think you were busy checking your lists and looking for deals Friday, now you know how Jed Hoyer and Rick Hahn feel. It is shopping season, Bruce. Good morning.
Good morning, David. And you're right. We are thankful for a lot of things, including mostly the great Chicago baseball fans and our great listeners here on The Score and inside the clubhouse. And David, nice to have you back this week after taking a rest week last weekend. And we have a lot to get to in a very quick hour and a half today, as we have Ohio State at Michigan starting at 10:30. So,
looking forward to that one, Bruce. I know you are waiting with bated breath. Ohio State, Michigan, the winner, the coach gets to coach the Bears.
That's right. I was gonna say.
We are in a Bears free zone, though, Bruce. We are gonna talk baseball. We're going to give people a break from the Bears' angst for 2 hours or at least 90 minutes. And here we go, because you know what? There was a ton going on, and there's a ton to talk about Cubs and Sox-wise. You know, the Mets didn't sign everybody last night. They spent $125 million on three different players. Sterling Marte, the guy who was probably the biggest name that went to the Mets. But free agency is here, and the White Sox ushered in the beginning of the hot stove league this past week. Kendall Graveman, good signing for the White Sox bullpen. Are you surprised, Bruce, that they went that route with their first big move?
No, I'm not. As a matter of fact, it made a lot of sense, David, because of the fact that when they took the option year from Craig Kimbrell and gave him the 1 year option at $16 million, Rick Hahn told us directly that part of this would be to possibly keep him, but more likely to explore the trade area for somebody like the Philadelphia Phillies or a team like that that's going to need a top of the line closer. And that is certainly what Kimbrell was for the Chicago Cubs. He was not a top of the line setup man for the Chicago White Sox. So the thinking is the stuff is still there. The mentality is still there, but only in the case of being a guy who is somebody that closes. And he wants to be a closer. Somebody needs a closer like that. And the White Sox, certainly by adding Graveman, fill that role. and now look for other players to get in a trade for Kimbrel.
312-644-6767. What do you think about the Hot Stove League? What do the Cubs and White Sox need to do in free agency or maybe via trade? Bruce, there's a lot we want to get to, but I do want to start out with Graveman, and then we'll get into other things, kind of get your quick opinions on them in a bullet point fashion, because there's been a lot going on. There's been a lot of baseball news that we have not necessarily focused on. But let's stick with Graveman for a second, because when you look at this White Sox bullpen, you know as well as anybody, year to year, the volatility and unpredictability of a bullpen is something that you can't always count on. Graveman's a guy that in 2021 was lights out. He was reliable as they come for the Astros at the back end of that bullpen. How does he fit the White Sox plans, and do you think that they can count on him to maintain that kind of consistency?
Well, you know, that's a great question, because there have been gaps in his career. There's been injuries in his career. So with that in mind, his dominance with Seattle last year before he was traded to Houston was, you know, it was one of the great stories in baseball. And Graveman right now looks like that power pitcher, strikeout per inning guy, low ERA, a 96, 97 mile an hour sinker, David. Not the four-seamer, but the two-seamer that is getting everybody out. He's got a great slider that he gets out. Swing and miss a pitch that 45% of the time is not connected with. So with all that in mind, this seems to be a great ad for them at 3 years and $24 million. $8 million for a setup man per year is a very reasonable price these days. If you see what pitchers are getting on the open market, you see fourth and fifth starters now getting $12 to $15 million a year. So that's the price for really good pitching right now.
It suggests that when you pay, even though it is a good price, when you invest $24 million on a bullpen arm, it suggests that your priorities are maybe in the bullpen. If that is your first move, is that a misread, Bruce? Because I think a lot of people, they look at this offseason, as you have pointed out time and again, right field, second base, starting pitching, and then maybe we thought they would supplement the bullpen. They start out by supplementing the bullpen. Should we read too much into that?
No, I think that you'll see more. I think that they're going to bring in even more arms, because what is the game right now, David? The game is a shortened starting rotation, shortened innings. And the White Sox were one of the league leaders in starting pitching innings, in particular the first half of the season. I think that the White Sox are looking at the situation and going, maybe we need to back off, especially on some of our veteran starting pitchers, some of the innings load, and maybe that impacted us as we went down the stretch last year, so that the injury and the innings load doesn't impact these starting pitchers quite as much as it did last year, where you had injuries which you can't really defend against, but you can defend against inning loads of 110, 112 pitches in the first couple months of the season. Now, they have horses, and they have guys that are very good at throwing, six innings and throwing 100, 110 pitches. But is it necessary if you have a bullpen full of solid arms that can get the job done and save them for the end of the year when you need them the most, and that them being the starting pitchers?
Point well taken. Before we get on to the Cubs news, Bruce, because you look, Garrett Crochet, I think, is undefined in terms of his role for 2022. Michael Kopech, we know, as you point out, is already going to be one of those starters where they're going to ask to maybe pitch more innings. Tapera's not likely to come back. Kimbrel's on the trade block. You can't really count on guys maybe that haven't done it before in your minor league system to come up and do it in a high leverage situation. You are a World Series contender. So maybe you're right, and I think maybe the White Sox aren't done trying to get another piece that they can trust, a veteran piece in that bullpen, to kind of put a guy in a position to succeed, where, you know, you want to keep a strength to strength, and you've got Bummer, and you've got Hendricks, and you've got all those things, but you cannot let that become a weakness for the White Sox.
Right, and maybe Keuchel becomes a tradable piece to somebody who needs a veteran left-hander, maybe a little bit more than the Chicago White Sox do. So even if you have to eat a portion of that contract a little bit, and I'm not suggesting that they have him directly on the open market, but why not? You know, when you have Crochet and you have Michael Kopech knocking on the door of starting pitching and building their innings up in that fashion. You know, we're going to see most likely, as you said, Kopech a starting pitcher and Crochet kind of going into that hybrid role that we saw Kopech in last year, expanded out and maybe getting 4, 5, 6 starts during the year. So this is a part of the player development, pitching development that the White Sox have out there. And I think the more the merrier when it comes to power arms in the bullpen for the White Sox.
Looking at the Cubs, Bruce, certainly not a move that created as big of a headline, and certainly maybe not even on the front page of the sports section, but tucked inside page 3, maybe in a smaller headline font, it was signing Harold Ramirez, the 27-year-old outfielder from the Indians, a right-handed hitter. How does he fit into the Cubs' plans? Is this a depth piece? Do you expect much? He's not been in the majors for that long. This is only his third season. But somebody that maybe Carter Hawkins, the new general manager, was familiar with, certainly coming from the Indians. How does he fit?
Well, they needed depth. You identified it perfectly, David. They need depth in the outfield, and they need some slug in the outfield. I mean, look, we saw the slug come on late in the year, finally for Ian Happ. After almost 4 months of doing absolutely nothing, he was one of the better hitters in the major leagues in the last month and a half. But counting on that and trying to get full seasons out of a guy with that type of potential is very difficult. You saw nothing out of Hayward last year. He had probably his worst year in the major leagues, and then ending the season with a concussion syndrome. You certainly got Ortega gave you a nice push. A surprising push, but are you really going to count on that as your center fielder or outfielder of the future? So they need outfield depth. They need an awful lot of it right now. And this Ramirez won't be the last one that they try to add.
All right, Bruce, so looking at free agency, because I think that's where everybody's attention gets at this time of year, and especially busy Friday in baseball. You look at what the Mets did. Starling Marte, Mark Canna, and Eduardo Escobar go to the Mets. That's $125 million in investments. And what happens is the domino effect. So we have the domino effect probably impacting the pursuit for the shortstop market. Obviously, Javi Baez was a Met last year. Doesn't look like he might be returning to New York. The Tigers are in on Javi Baez. More than one report yesterday nationally linked the Tigers to Javi Baez. That certainly affects maybe the Cubs' offseason plans and maybe affects the White Sox in an indirect way because the Tigers are loading up. What do you know about the Tigers' pursuit of Javi, and what do you think about that fit?
Well, I think it's a pretty good fit. I think that Baez, if you look at him and you look at his second half last year, and you kind of forget the nightmarish first half he had with the Cubs last year, which was kind of ugly, especially on defense, where you had a Gold Glove shortstop come in and make a ton of errors early in the season, not look like himself, having to be taken out of a game for losing track of outs and getting doubling up. It just didn't look like he was responding very well to being a would-be free agent or would-be trade piece. But when he went to the Mets, he did exceedingly well, played a great second base. And, that versatility of being an all-star shortstop or second baseman, and the fact that he's going to play at age 29 this year, that says everything you want to hear about a guy that's not looking for a 10-year contract. I don't think we've heard anything attached to him like we have for Correa and Seager, who are seeking, 10-year, $300 million contracts. I think when you look at Baez, he might be, the best option for a lot of teams out there, and Detroit is certainly one of them, who are starting to build their offense, and we saw how their pitching is coming along, and the fact that they might be the leading team to fight the White Sox this season in the American League Central.
in this off-season game of musical chairs where you have a bunch of shortstops circling and you have Corey Seager and Carlos Correa, and if Javi Baez takes the seat and it's the Tigers and it's in Detroit, how might that affect other teams or the marketplace, specifically the Cubs? And not that they were necessarily pursuing Javi, but maybe that makes Carlos Correa less likely to sign with the Tigers, obviously. Maybe it makes him more likely to be attainable if you are willing to go that deep into your pocketbook, Bruce. Does it have any effect on the Cubs in their pursuit of a shortstop if they are indeed pursuing a shortstop?
Yeah, I mean, look, we keep hearing from the Cubs that they will be active. They do have money. But how many times have we heard from the front office, we have to be intelligent about our moves? So, David, I will ask you, what does intelligent mean when they talk about signing free agents but being intelligent? What do you hear from Hoyer and from ownership and from their new general manager when you hear, yes, we will, but we must be intelligent?
I hear the desire to be prudent and to get bang for your buck, to be obviously in search of those bargains that where you can get the most out of your investment. But I also think intelligent doesn't necessarily mean reluctant to spend. I think sometimes being intelligent is understanding the marketplace and where you are as a franchise, and sometimes the reality that you have to overspend maybe in free agency at times in your growth, in times of your development, because that's what you need at that specific time. Because this is the time for the Cubs, I think, may have to look at a guy like Correa, may have to look at a guy like Seager. And if they are attainable, the intelligent thing to do is to justify that investment and to maybe go higher than you would want to go, because at this point in time, you need a guy like that. You need to tell the fans you're serious about winning. You need to give them a reason to come to Wrigley Field again. And I'm not so sure, Bruce, that when you look at what intelligence represents, it's not always meaning just the cheaper route. The smarter route may be to go big or go home.
What do you think about Baez coming back? How do you think that would be?
I don't like that idea.
Tell me why. Tell me why the fan base wouldn't like it.
I've never liked that idea, Bruce.
Okay.
Well, and I like Javi Baez as a player, but I don't know how you fix a broken offense and you change your approach by bringing back somebody who represented the worst of times with his swing and miss and his lack of plate discipline. And I know he was great. And I love everything about Javi, the exciting player. But I don't know that you are making progress by bringing somebody back that represents something you're trying to get away from.
I think that's a great point. And again, somebody else can underpay Javier Baez better than the Cubs can. In other words, the expectations here were always you must pay market value for Javier Baez because he's been a Cub since 2011. Now that is all gone away. Does the Baez camp look at the Cubs differently now, knowing that he's already been traded somewhere else and that the expectations of what he should get as a Cub are no longer there?
I think so. Don't you? I think they have to. I don't think you give them necessarily what you might have before in terms of a hometown discount. I don't think that you're willing to do that or make that kind of concession, because the Cubs now, they traded you. So they're like everybody else. They put themselves back into the pool with every other team that wants your services, if they indeed want your services, which I'm not sure they do yet. Maybe we'll wait and see. But I think they're just like everybody else.
Yeah, I agree with you. I don't know if Baez does represent the type of player that they want in the future. And that's not demeaning Baez, because his talents are many and unique in very many ways. But the swing and miss and the lack of on-base percentage is probably some area that they're probably trying to shore up rather than go back to what it was.
That's what we think. What do you think? 312-644-6767. The Score listener line is powered by BetQL. Bet smarter, beat the books. Download the BetQL app today or visit BetQL.com. That's where we find Jack in Hillside. Jack, welcome inside the clubhouse.
Thanks. Good morning. Fellas, Bruce, I've been listening the last few weeks, and I'm totally in disagreement about the White Sox needing an outfielder at all, and I think they probably could be fine with if they'd re-signed Cesar Hernandez or someone adequate at second base. since there's no chance they'll ever do something like move Tim Anderson to second base and go get a real shortstop like Carlos Correa. That's not on the table. So I agree with you about adding to the bullpen and the pitching. What would be the value of spending some of that money on a upgrade for backup catching to take some of the load, and they end up being so important for veteran guys like Maldonado was, I think Cleveland's Perez, or you know, to get these guys who manage a stick and can really help the pitching staff by easing that load on Grandal. What do you think about that?
Thanks, Jack, and happy holidays to you. Look, David, I like the idea of Perez. I like the idea of a veteran backstop that can catch 70 games. And if there is an injury again to Grandal, that you're not concerned about it and that you don't lose as much defensively. And it's not a knock on Collins. It's not a knock on Zavala. But I think the reality of those guys being top flight major league catchers, I think that we saw last year that's probably not going to be what they are going to be. And with Grandal's age and his importance of being in the middle of that lineup with that switch hitting, but most importantly, left-handed bat, that power bat, got to find a way to keep him strong. And
I agree with you.
Right. And if you don't like the defensive metrics on him other than the framing, you need to get a top-flight catcher. Perez might be the guy.
It's a tough balancing act, but I think we saw in the postseason, specifically with the Astros, just the value of a defensive catcher and how he, you know, handling the staff and everything that comes with those intangibles. You kind of need that more than maybe the White Sox have at the moment, and certainly a veteran backup would be great.
We saw it on Bruce. The other side of town too, with David, all year long. When Contreras wasn't in a game, the game spun out of control. There was no captain on that field to make people feel like, I got this behind the plate. I'll throw the guys out if they get on. I'll come out there and give every pitcher the feeling that we're all in this together. Cubs lost a lot of games where Wilson Contreras couldn't catch, and those eight other backups, with all due respect to them professionally, just were not getting the job done. So that's a glaring example of what can happen to you if you don't have top-quality catching.
And, Bruce, that's a good segue into the Cubs catching situation. You mentioned Wilson Contreras, and I wondered what you think of this. Unfortunately, one of their top catching prospects, Miguel Amaya, who was their fifth-rated prospect, is set to undergo Tommy John surgery, which will set his development back. That's a big blow for the organization. He was a guy that you thought might be ready at this point, and he may be somebody that now you have to reevaluate what your timetable is and maybe what your priorities are at that position. How does that affect, not necessarily his development, because I know everybody understands Tommy John surgery recovery, even for catchers, but Wilson Contreras contractually, Does that make him more likely or less likely or have no effect at all on his possibility of getting an extension this offseason?
It's a great question, because if you do extend Wilson Contreras, you have to leave the option available to be able to trade him, okay? So that is a key, and that might be something that Contreras and his camp balk at. They might get the money, but if they don't get that assurance that they're going to be around for quite a bit of time with the Cubs, that might prevent them from wanting to sign and hold him off until next year to sign a long-term deal. So I think the key is signing the proper deal for Contreras, keeping him around, but also having the flexibility to trade him if you want to as you move forward. Because I still get that feeling, David, and I don't know if you feel the same way, that there's still some doubt when it comes to Wilson Contreras as being the long-term catcher for the Cubs in their mind.
You sense that? I think you do sense that. That's an accurate read. I don't know that I have the doubt, Bruce. I don't know how you feel about it, but I think when you have the Cubs and you've got rid of all the players you've gotten rid of, you got to anchor on somebody. You got to really invest in somebody to be that leader to build around, and you could do a lot worse than Wilson Contreras.
Well, he represented two different areas. Before we go to a break and bring in our next guest, which is Daniel Moskos, who's the new assistant pitching coach for the Chicago Cubs. And David, very quickly before we go to break, he represents two things. One guy that stood up against the guys who were going to be traded or possible free agents and said, let's play ball here and stop this. And another side who represents an emotional guy that for some people may be too emotional.
Yeah. Yeah. But somewhere in between, you've got a leader. And somewhere in between, you've got a winner. And you have a guy with experience that can do a lot of things defensively and certainly offensively. He is somebody that you can win with. I think that has been proven. So that will be an ongoing conversation. Wilson Contreras and his Cub future in light of the Miguel Amaya news, in light of the free agency and offseason hot stove, which seems to be heating up. But next, Bruce, as you alluded to, we have the Cubs' new assistant pitching coach, Daniel Moskos, joins us next on Inside the Clubhouse here, Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score.
Hendricks works his motion. Swing and a miss. Another 88-mile-per-hour fastball right down the middle. And it fooled Perez. Strike three, one away.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio 670 The Score. Bruce Levine, David Haw here until 11 o'clock as we are every Saturday morning. That was a highlight from Zach Zabin and WSCR. Thank you, guys. Of Kyle Hendricks earlier last season pitching for the Cubs. And it is time now to go to our guest hotline sponsored by Circa Resort and Casino in Las Vegas, home of the world's largest sports book. And that is where we find new Cubs assistant pitching coach Daniel Moskos. Daniel, thank you for waiting. Welcome to Chicago. How are you doing this morning?
Doing well. Thank you all for having me.
No problem. Listen, when the Cubs signed a 35-year-old lefty who was a number four overall pick in the 2007 draft, I wondered how many innings you had left. So how many innings do you have left?
You know, it would take some off-season conditioning for sure, but I still got a couple miles in there.
Daniel, explain to us exactly how the job is being designed for you and how you come in with Tommy Hotovy, and what areas do you think you will be concentrating on the most? We hear about pitch shaping. We hear about, using, pitches and different grips. Tell us a little bit about where you think your concentration will be.
You definitely alluded to the right focus area. I think I'm going to be tasked with a lot of pitch development type stuff. It's something I've, had a decent track record with, dating back to my time at Driveline, where I was really working in the pitch design lab. And so, I think I'll see a very similar focus with the Cubs.
You know, Daniel, I want to look at your own experience and how it will frame the type of pitching coach that you will become or have already become. You were the fourth overall pick of the 2007 draft with the Pirates. Things obviously didn't go like you might have anticipated the day you were drafted. That experience, and I think maybe struggling to the extent that you did as a player, how does that inform your experience and your approach as a pitching coach? And in terms of being able to relate to what players might be going through as they struggle and knowing what may be going, what may be inside their head and how to unlock whatever it is that's keeping them back.
I think experience really, really helps. I don't think that you have to have played to coach. I don't want to be thrown into that bucket either, because I think that, there's different skill sets and you can bring a lot of different things to the table. But I do think that having those experiences is something that will really benefit me, especially as I've, started to learn the new tenets of development, the leveraging of technology and the external feedback process and all of that. They're tools that you add to your tool belt. And so the experience is something that I can definitely draw from, especially for me. One of my biggest limiting factors was lack of a breaking ball, or at least a consistent one. And then, I went up to Driveline, and all of a sudden, with some time spent in the pitch design lab, I developed two separate breaking balls that were both, pretty solid. So I just missed out on some of that development as a player. Now I want to make sure that guys have access to all of those resources to see what their careers could be.
Daniel Moskos, the assistant pitching coach for the Chicago Cubs, joining us in Inside the Clubhouse for a few more minutes. Daniel, communicating with the modern player, you're still a very young man yourself. How essential is it to be able to communicate on the level that a lot of young millennial types are used to getting communicated with? In other words, being able to communicate with them and also repeating on a level where they're responding. How much of that goes into your coaching, and how much of that is talked about among coaches these days when it comes to teaching, you know, the fundamental things that you want to teach them?
I think that you just probably circled right to the maybe most important variable that there is. Everybody has data now. Everybody has technology. But how are you leveraging it, and how are you delivering that information to the players, and how are they receiving it and perceiving it, I think is probably the biggest dynamic that you have to hit on. And I think that, you know, how you get comfortable with that is you have to get comfortable with your players. You have to get to know them. You have to build relationships there and know what makes them tick, how they process information, and deliver it in as close to a mode as you can for that person. It has to become very individualized, because you're essentially speaking a bunch of different languages. You know, you're going to have your really, really intellectual guys, and you can talk to them in complex terms, and you're going to have some of the more simple guys that you need to deliver it in that method. And then you talk about the, you know, the Latin population as well. You know, you got to be able to deliver it in Spanish too. And you know, that's something that I pride myself in, is being able to communicate with, no matter which language you're speaking, millennial, older, you know, Gen X or, you know, Latin, you got to be able to do it all.
Was that something that was a priority for you before you wanted to embark in this coaching career? Was that something you worked on when you were a player or growing up, or when you developed that ability to communicate in different languages? Was that something with this in mind?
You know, I think the different languages is just having spent time in a clubhouse and realizing that there's different personalities and you have to interact with guys in different ways. It's not just like a cookie cutter approach. And then on the Spanish speaking front, you know, I was fortunate to have taken some years of it in high school and at least established somewhat of a foundation. But then it really took off for me when I played winter ball and then summer ball down in Mexico. And, you know, I was in a predominantly Spanish speaking clubhouse, and, you know, you really have to adapt, and, you know, it kind of just pushed me on that like level of my development to, you know, personal development to want to be better at speaking Spanish so that I could interact with those players. And now it's obviously something that's really necessary.
Daniel, the pitching grip and being able to manipulate a ball and be able to hold on to it as long as you need to has become something that's at the forefront of baseball over the last 5 or 6 years. Major League Baseball banning certain type of tack that you can put on a baseball, and now trying to formulate their own baseball that has tack on it for use. Can you explain the importance of that tack being on a baseball and being able to manipulate all these grips and all the way that people like yourself are teaching different grips and spin rate right now?
Well, that last piece is the most important variable when it comes to tack is the spin rate. You're looking to up RPMs, which, you know, RPMs is what generates movement. You know, and then, you know, wrist position will dictate mostly the direction that's going to move in. And so if you can increase RPMs, you can probably increase overall movement, which is shown to be beneficial from the pitch design front. And so now with loss of tack, or, you know, if we get to a, you know, universally pre-tacked baseball, you know, what you're looking for is leverage on the ball. You know, and so you put it on the pads of the finger so that you can best leverage the baseball, which will then help you theoretically generate more spin.
All right, Daniel. So we know probably based on listening to you and just based on your resume, what the Cubs saw in you and wanted to bring into their organization. But as you sat out there and you kind of surveyed your options, you looked around Major League Baseball, what about the Cubs and specifically their approach to pitching impressed you? What are they doing right in your mind that maybe not other teams or maybe other teams aren't doing as well?
So we will actually have to go back, you know, a little bit over 2 years ago. Before I took the job with the Yankees, I actually heavily interviewed with the Cubs, and they became one of my finalists to take a job as a minor league pitching coach. And so through that interview process, you know, it was very well laid out what the direction of the pitching department is going to be, especially on the minor league side, you know, where they want to head in, the direction they want to head in. And I know the people that they have in place, and, you know, the people I interviewed most with, the first person would be Craig Breslow, very, very impressive, brilliantly smart, and I love his direction, love his passion for the pitching department. And then a former colleague of mine, Casey Jacobson, is one of the pitching coordinators. And so, you know, I know his direction he wants to head in. It aligns with my vision as well. And so it just, you know, I was really impressed with him the first time around. And so when they came back 2 years from now, I saw that they had, you know, followed through on their agenda to push development at the minor league level, which is really, really exciting. And hopefully we can keep that, you know, continuity up to the big league level and continue to develop at the big league level as well.
As the strike zone changes, as swings change, more importantly, Daniel, do pitches that were not wanting to be used, for instance, a two-seam fastball, which many pitchers were pushed away from because of launch angle for a long period of time, does that now, with certain pitchers, especially with great velocity, does that pitch now become more important again in baseball as some of the hitting techniques have changed and gone away from launch angle?
I mean, I think that you'll see constant kind of adaptations and little like miniature eras, if you will, you know, where you see a developmental approach change on the hitting side. And so you see pitching adjust and adapt to that, or vice versa. You see pitching start to prioritize a particular thing, and then you see the hitting approach adjust because of that. So I think you'll see this cat and mouse game like that go back and forth. And so I think it'll just kind of be a constant adapting process. That's dependent upon just what's prioritized at that time. You know, on the two-seam fastball front, for, you know, you want some of my insight on that. I think really what we've gone towards is just looking for the elite versions of a particular pitch. And so I think what we found out is there was probably a lot of guys that were really just throwing average two-seam fastballs that don't play out as well as maybe the average four-seam fastball. And so, you know, now you're seeing less guys throw them because they're just looking for the best version of whatever fastball that they feature. So, you know, unfortunately, and the two-seam fastballs just died off a little bit, I think, because of that.
So, Daniel, we know that, you know, you and Tommy Howdeby, the pitching coach, will be working with a collection of young, talented pitchers in the Cubs system. You got guys at the major league level, Keegan Thompson, Justin Steele, Adber Alzolay, who are ready for that next step. You got guys at the minor league level. We've seen, you know, Caleb Killian have a good a fall league, Anderson Espinoza, Braylon Marquez, guys with promise. How would you assess overall the young pitching depth in the Cubs organization right now?
Oh, I think that's why I'm probably so excited about this, is we're ready to see that wave of prospects really start to have a chance to establish themselves. You know, there are definitely some really young, exciting arms that Cubs fans are going to get to know over the next couple of years. And, you know, it's just going to be really exciting to be a part of their development and hopefully their establishment in the big leagues.
Speaking of that, and by the way, David and I really appreciate you taking the time out today and getting to know us. And again, welcome to Chicago. I know everybody's anticipating your arrival here to help out. When you look at Kyle Hendricks and you see teams adjust to him and the type of season he had last year, how excited are you to get with a veteran like him or Mills and to be able to maybe add some depth to some of their pitches that have become pretty predictable for a lot of teams after facing him for many years, regardless of the talent he has and the pitch ability? Veteran pitchers can certainly prove their pitches with help from somebody like yourself.
Sure. It's really exciting, especially when you get some of those, you know, those veteran guys who do have a routine established. You know, as long as they receive a little bit of guidance on, you know, how they can fine tune and sharpen something here or there, you know, it's not about it overhauling a pitch. It's just about trying to make it the best version of itself. You know, so in that light, we're looking more at like pitch optimization as opposed to a true pitch design where you're trying to create something new. And, you know, those guys have had success. So, you know, it's something that's important to build on that. And then, you know, like I said, just optimize what they feature to make it the best version and go from there.
So, Daniel, we'll let you go, but because I know you have a big day of preparation for the Clemson-South Carolina game tonight. Is that something you still spend some time investing in every autumn Saturday?
Of course. I'm a huge football fan. There's not many games, Clemson football, that I do miss. Maybe at the tail end of the baseball season when football, there's some football overlap, I might miss a game or two, but usually I'm right in front of the TV or even making the trip up to Clemson to go see it. So big football fan, big day today, obviously. Not the season that Clemson was expecting to have or hoping to have, but they can still finish on a really high note by beating their rival.
Well, enjoy the game, and thank you so much for your time, and best of luck. Look forward to meeting you in person.
Of course. Thank you all for having me. This was a blast. Look forward to interacting in person as well.
Daniel Moskos, the Cubs' new assistant pitching coach here on Inside the Clubhouse. Bruce Levine, David Haw. When we come back, Bruce gets a vote in the Hall of Fame this year, and I will talk about the ballots that we both received in the mail this week. Next on Inside the Clubhouse, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Everybody up here at U.S. Cellular. Sox 5 runs, 6 hits. The 2-1 to Bartlett. Swing, chop to short. Ramirez has it, throws. Burley picks the perfect game. His second no-hitter. He no-hits the Tampa Bay Rays. People going crazy here at U.S. Cellular. He's mobbed by his teammates. A perfecto.
Welcome back inside the clubhouse. Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score. Bruce Levine, David Haw until 11 o'clock. 10:30 today. Ohio State, Michigan coming up here on The Score. Bruce, that was a highlight from Mark Burley, and thank you for that highlight because it's a reminder. Mark Burley's on the Hall of Fame ballot that went out this week. We have until the end of December to fill them out. This is your first year doing so. How are you looking forward to this task? And it is a task, a lot of research involved, but it is a lot of fun as well. I'm filling out a ballot again, looking forward to getting to that this year. That's more of a show than a segment, Bruce, but quickly, how are you feeling when you look at the names on that list?
I'm honored, but it's a daunting task because I keep going up and back on the steroids guys, and I've asked other Hall of Famers who were in there for some of their input before I make my decision, and they're all over the place. Some of them have told me, well, Bonds and Clemens were already Hall of Famers before they started using steroids. You should go ahead and vote for them because they were great players before that. At the same time, they cheated, okay? It's going to be right. The same conversation 10 years from now when Jose Altuve is being looked at as a Hall of Famer, and they're going to say, well, he didn't do steroids, but for a certain amount of years during his career, he certainly cheated, and the numbers might be skewed because of that. So we're asked to be able to read minds and know when people started cheating, when they didn't, and how that applies to whether we should vote for them to go into this museum or not. It's the most important Hall of Fame in all of sports. Less than 1% have ever gotten in it. It creates the most interest and conversation of any sports Hall of Fame. And I take it tremendously in a serious way, but I find it to be daunting.
Bonds, Clemens, Sosa, obviously those are the names that you, when you talk about the taint and the scandal. This
Ramirez.
Year, though, the first, you know, but now, yeah. Now you have, yeah, A-Rod and David Ortiz. You know, they're going on the ballot for the first time.
What do you do with A-Rod, for example? Do you consider him doing, did he do steroids his entire career? Is that the assumption? Or did he do it toward the end to stay at a level that almost gave him 700 home runs, made him one of the great players in the history of the game? It's really difficult.
And it's difficult because every voter is going to have their own code that they follow and their own set of circumstances. It's so arbitrary from voter to voter, from era to era, and I think that makes it difficult. You can't have a Hall of Fame, I think, without those names and those people in it. But I think it's a wing that may be a steroid era type of tribute. But I don't know how you do that either. Because
even more importantly now, David, with the way that baseball has taken to gambling and the advertising for it,
right?
It skews your idea about Pete Rose. We know he's
He's done some disgusting things. He certainly doesn't deserve to be recognized because of some of the off-field stuff. But is that gambling now? Is that the hypocrisy that baseball has to face now when it comes to Pete Rose?
We need to take an entire show, or at least a big part of one show in December, to look at all these issues and to
litigate
some
Pete
of these
on.
Things.
We'll have Pete on.
We should have Pete on. That's not a bad idea. If you can book Pete Rose, I think we'll find the time to talk to Pete Rose. That would be a fun conversation to have, Bruce. You got names like Mark Burley still on there to be considered. You got other names that are deserving. And it's going to be something that we continue to discuss. But next, we've got to shift gears. We've got to change the subject. We've got to find out who might be Chicago bound, our favorite new segment here on Inside the Clubhouse. Keep with us, Bruce Levine, David Haugh, Chicago Sports Radio, 670 The Score.
Whoa, okay. This one says you get a free phone if you switch. Hey, this one also says you get a free phone if you switch.
Yeah, they all do, hon.
Huh. The T-Mobile one says their customers had the lowest wireless bills versus the other big guys over the past 5 years. And their latest experience plans have Netflix included, plus a year of Dash Pass by DoorDash.
Hang on, let me see that. Oh, yeah, we're switching.
That's what I'm talking about. Do we clap now or...
At T-Mobile, get savings that keep stacking up. That's value you can feel every day. And right now, bring your phone to T-Mobile and we'll give you $400 when you switch.
Savings based on Harris X billing snapshots from Q3 2021 to Q4 2025 compared to average AT&T and Verizon bills. Comparison excludes discounts, credits, and optional charges. $400 with new account on qualifying line. Unlocked device credit ported 90 plus days with device and carrier and timely redemption required. Virtual MasterCard typically takes 14 weeks, no cash access, and expires in 6 months. Card issued by Sunrise Banks N.A. member FDIC. Visit T-Mobile.com.
Presented by T-Mobile, the official wireless partner of Odyssey Sports. With an awesome network and great savings, there's never been a better time to join T-Mobile. Visit your neighborhood store to make the switch today.
How We Made Your Mother is a rewatch podcast that looks back episode by episode at the hit TV show How I Met Your Mother. It's hosted by me, Josh Radner, along with series co-creator and my friend Craig Thomas.
Follow How We Made Your Mother wherever you get your podcasts.